And good morning to you, Roger, and good morning to the world as we come your way with our weekly get-together here on Saturday morning to talk about the most basic industry on the planet, producing food for the growing population. We do that here on the Saturday morning show. And as I mentioned earlier in my conversation with Matt and Roger in Huntley, Illinois, where I'm working this morning, it is 9 below on my thermometer. Feels like 23 below zero. Lot to talk about this morning. First of all, I have to mention the fact that New Orleans has become the agricultural capital of the farm organization world. Earlier this month, of course, the American Farm Bureau Federation held its 100th annual convention in the Big Easy, New Orleans. And coming up next week, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be holding its annual convention in New Orleans. But in between those two groups, this week in New Orleans, the sheep industry has been there. The American Sheep Industry Association, and they have been meeting in. Well, we're going to talk about sheep production this morning. More basically, maybe wool production, because we're going to talk about a sheep shearing school being made available to people who want to learn how to shear sheep for the wool. And we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes here on the Saturday morning show. With the reopening of the government, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's chief economist said he expects the agency will release a monthly crop supply demand report as planned on February 8th. If the USDA offices reopen on Monday, more information regarding other key crop reports that were delayed due to the partial U.S. government shutdown will, quote, be forthcoming once all USDA staff return to work. The words of chief economist for USDA, Robert Johansson. Johansson also said, Johansson also said he expects the USDA to hold its annual outlook forum as planned on February 21 and 22, unless USDA's funding lapses again before that date. So, we'll be getting back to getting reports from USDA that are vital to producers who are now making plans for crop production in 2019. And also will be important to traders in commodities and to world traders in the commodity world as well, because without the official USDA reports on production numbers and cattle on feed, and which was due to come out yesterday, the monthly cattle on feed report didn't make it. And without all that information, we just have private firms that are coming up with their own estimates, and they're probably not far off, but they don't have the resources of the USDA with people all over the country checking in to production, supply, demand here in the U.S. So that is a relief to a lot of people who have been waiting for that information. We're at 12 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and yes, we did come back from Arizona on Wednesday of this week, and as I said, our friends in Arizona and our friends in Illinois said, what are you doing? Well, work does demand that we put in an appearance here as well as out there, so trying to do both. And after all, when I was a kid growing up on the dairy farm in Wisconsin, I can remember vividly one morning when the temperature at La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the Mississippi, hit 51 below zero. The mercury disappeared in the thermometer. I remember seeing that on the barn thermometer we had on the farm. So what is 9 below compared to 51 below? It's a heat wave. Well, we're going to talk about the sheep industry when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Quarter after five here on the Saturday Morning Show, and I'm about to say hello to a gentleman I don't think I've had the privilege of meeting during my time here at WGN, but he's involved in the sheep industry in Indiana, and something that caught my eye a week or so ago was an announcement from the Indiana Sheep Association that they're going to conduct a sheep shearing school for people who want to learn how to shear sheep for the wool. So, Larry Hopkins, are you with me from the Hoosier State this morning?
I'm here, Warren. It's good to be with you on a cold morning.
What part of Indiana are you, Larry?
I'm pretty good.
And where is your farming operation in Indiana?
Well, we live just north of Indianapolis, probably about 45 minutes on the northwest side, so we're in central Indiana.
How cold is it on your thermometer this morning?
Well, right now it looks like it's about down to 8 degrees, so it's supposed to warm up to the low 20s today, I think.
I was going to say, you've got a heat wave, because here in Huntley, Illinois, northwest of Chicago, it's 9 below on my thermometer and feels like 23 below. Now, you were not able to get to New Orleans for the American Sheep Gathering this week, I take it. You stayed home in Indiana?
Yes, that's right. I'm here. We've got two representatives down there from our state organization, our executive director, and then our national delegate is down there, but I'm up here this week.
What are some of the issues that concern sheep producers and wool producers these days? What are you concerned about as far as Farm Bill or any other activity?
Well, in the short term, the immediate thing that's been kind of hurting all ag producers is this government shutdown. Spent a lot of time talking about that the last couple of days, but it sounds like that's finally been resolved, at least for a few weeks. But that was playing havoc with the markets, just the fact that the statistical service and the marketing service were down and we couldn't get information. January is an important month because that's when the national sheep inventory occurs, and so far I don't think any activity's gone on related to that, so that's a short-term concern. On the long-term, the American sheep industry has a program called Let's Grow, and that's a program that they've started about 3 years ago, and it's trying to bring efficiencies into the sheep industry and innovation, like a lot of other commodity groups in the country. You know, the sheep industry needs to adapt to a changing world and changing markets, so that's a program to try to help our industry become more efficient, and that's what a lot of sheep producers are focused on right now.
So let's talk about the two parts of the industry, lamb production for food and then sheep production for wool. Where do we stand today with those two products? And are they increasing in consumption? What's the status right now?
Well, actually, the sheep industry is headed in a good direction. The wool market, and I'll start with that, the wool market's been on an upward trend for probably the last 6 years. And, you know, wool prices are probably around $4-$4.50 a pound right now, which is a good market for us. On the lamb side, lamb prices aren't as good as they were maybe a year and a half ago, but they're still not too bad. You know, the sheep industry is a little different than other commodity groups in the United States. We actually don't produce enough lamb to meet the demand. In fact, there's more lamb and mutton imported into the United States from Australia and New Zealand than what the sheep industry produces domestically. So we have a market in the United States for lamb. We just need, as an industry, to be able to grow and meet that demand and do it efficiently. One of the problems we have is that the lamb that comes in from New Zealand and Australia is very, very cheap, and that tends to drive our market down a little bit, in that we are not able to compete sometimes with how cheap that product is that's dumped on our market. That has to do somewhat with exchange rates and the World Trade Organization and other things that are out of our control. But there's a demand in the United States, especially as the country diversifies, for more lamb. And we just need, as an industry, to be able to meet that demand. But we don't have a problem of overproduction like a lot of other commodity groups do in the United States.
Well, the thing that caught my eye, Larry, was the news release that came from the Indiana Sheep Association that the association in Indiana will be hosting a sheep shearing school on Saturday, March 2nd at Poe's Sheep Farm in Franklin, Indiana. How much demand is there for people who can shear sheep today?
Well, there's actually a big demand, Oren. It's something that's vital to the sheep industry to have your sheep sheared. If you don't get your sheep sheared at least once a year, then that puts them in an unhealthy situation, just because of the dirt and parasites and dung tags and everything else that can get embedded into the wool. So it's very important to have your sheep sheared. And unfortunately, it's become a little bit of a lost art, and there are not that many sheep shearers around anymore. So it's important to try to bring new shearers into the marketplace and help the younger shearers and the inexperienced shearers become more experienced. We're looking at putting together a program where we'll be able to certify shearers that they meet a certain level. But shearing is very important, and unfortunately, not just in Indiana, but in probably every state in this country, there's a lack of shearers. So we try to do this every year. Most other state associations have some sort of a shearing training program where they try to encourage shearers to get into the business. Now, some people want to do shearing just so they can shear their own flock. Others are interested in becoming more experienced, and they are then available for many producers. But right now in Indiana, we probably have somewhere around 20 sheep shearers, and we could easily use double that number.
Well, reading from the press release, a registration fee of $50 will cover the cost of the workshop, lunch, and required shearing equipment. And participants encouraged to bring their own equipment if available. But it says anyone is welcome to register regardless of experience level to learn the skills and methods required to successfully shear a sheep. And all instructors present will be master shearers, including lead organizer and professional shearer Steve Kennedy. So there are going to be people there who really know how to do it, and I've watched it a couple of times during my career, and I'm just amazed at how quickly a sheep shearer can get the wool off a lamb. They can do it quickly, can't they, Larry?
Oh, definitely. A lot of times state fairs will have shearing contests, and you know, a master shearer, somebody like Steve Kennedy, can shear sheep in just a few minutes. It's amazing how they're able to hold them at different angles and use their body and their legs to turn the sheep so that they don't struggle and that they cleanly shear the wool off. But yes, it can be done very, very quickly, and it's very impressive to watch a skilled shearer shear a sheep.
And I note the Indiana Sheep Association, one of the oldest livestock organizations in Indiana, founded as the Indiana Wool Growers in 1876. You weren't around for the founding, I hope.
Well, I don't think I was. You know, it's an organization that has a lot of tradition and history. And as you know, in the farming industry, many families go back generations doing the same thing. And we certainly have some sheep farmers in Indiana that are third and fourth generation sheep farmers. So it's important to us to keep the tradition alive and keep the association headed into the future. So that's why we need more shears, and that's what our organization is trying to accomplish.
I don't want to get into a lot of email addresses, but is there one that is the best to get more information on this event? I'm looking at indianasheep.com. Would that be the place if people want to get more information beyond what we've talked about this morning they can go to?
Yes, that would be it. We have the registration form posted on our website, and you can go to the website, fill out the form, print out the form, fill it out, and mail it in. There's also a number there to call if you have questions about it. So everything they need is on the website there at indianasheep.com.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Larry, for providing us with the information on the industry and on this special job. If somebody is looking to improve their skills or maybe just begin the skill, March 2nd, Franklin, Indiana is where you will be able to do it. And with it 9 below zero here in Huntley, Illinois, I think I'll get under my wool blanket and warm up, if that's okay with you.
Yep. Well, that's good. I hope you don't send that cold weather our way just yet. So you can enjoy it a little bit longer. How's that?
That's pretty good. Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate your taking time to get up early and join us here on WGN Radio Chicago. Our thanks to Larry Hopkins, who is the president of the Indiana Sheep Association. We're at 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, coming up to news headlines, Samuelson says, and then we'll talk markets. Max Armstrong is going to be talking to Paul Georgi of Allendale this morning, and they've got their annual information event coming up next week, and so we'll talk about that as well. But we'll be back with more when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. A good visit with Larry Hopkins of the Indiana Sheep Association here on the program this morning. Enjoyed visiting with him and learning more about the industry, whether it's for lamb meat production or for wool production. Fascinating industry. And I have had the opportunity to watch some of the competition at county and state fairs around the country. And it's absolutely fascinating to watch it all take place when you've got people who are trained and really know how to do it. You're with us here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Radio Chicago. It's 5:30 straight up, and good morning again to Roger Bett. Where it's 26 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, as I mentioned, still to come, a market discussion with Max Armstrong and his guest Paul Georgi of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois. That's coming up. And it's also time for Samuelson Says. I am Orion, and my suggestion this week is let's grow up.
At MB Financial Bank, we have an understanding that no one knows your business better than you. You started it, which is why you start out early every day. You know that timely delivery of supplies is just as important as on-time delivery of product. Yeah, production downtime sometimes means overtime. And there never seems to be a good time to take time off. You get it. MB gets that. Because we understand you need every part of your business working for you. MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Member FDIC.
Come on, let's grow up. That is my message this week for our legislators on Capitol Hill. And contrary to what some of your emails say, I have not taken sides or discussed politics on Samuelson Says. I learned a long time ago there are two subjects that should never be discussed with family or friends: politics and religion. I really don't take political sides on Samuelson Says. All I ask for is some common sense and the ability to use the word compromise to deal with important national issues. Right now, on the government shutdown issue, we are acting like little children. Democratic members of the House, you can't fly to the Middle East on a government plane during the shutdown. Mr. President, you can't deliver the State of the Union address in the House chamber because that is our House, not yours. Two statements I have heard from the two party spokesmen recently. Well, I have two suggestions. If government employees are not getting paid, why should members of Congress get paid? And if ever there was a time to seriously think about term limits, now is the time. We already have term limits for the executive branch, but I think we need it for the legislative branch as well. There are important issues that need to be handled: trade agreements, immigration issues, border security. All of these issues that need to be handled by the legislative branch and passed on to the president for his approval or veto. And yet, they are not willing to use the word compromise on either side of the issue. So again, my message to those folks on Capitol Hill: let's not go through this for the next 3 years. Do the job we voters are paying you to do, and that is to legislate and to listen what the voters are saying across the country. And if you don't do that, then I suggest we stop paying members of Congress from the federal budget. It's time to grow up in our nation's capital. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. 22 minutes before 6, and in Huntley, Illinois, where I'm working this morning, 9 below zero on my thermometer, and feeling like minus 23 degrees. It's a cold morning, and as you heard Roger, be careful driving. Slow down, because if you speed, you'll get to your accident sooner than anybody else, and you don't want that, particularly when it's this cold in the morning across the Midwest and due to get even colder and more wintry as the days go on into next week. So be careful, slow down, and be nice to the other drivers too. Okay, we're going to check in with Max Armstrong and his guest to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
From the offices of Allendale Incorporated, Paul Georgie joining us here in the studio this weekend. Well, are you busy in a meeting season? Are you meeting with growers?
We are. We've got we've done a lot of meetings, especially with banks. Lending institutions have come out of the woodwork again and putting on a lot of meetings for crop insurance and so forth. We also have the Allendale annual meeting coming, air conference coming up this coming week, and it's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We got Drew Lerner going to talk about the weather here for this coming year, and he's been pretty good at it for us for many years. And then we got our grains on Wednesday and livestock on Thursday.
I would imagine Drew's look at South America will be of great interest, given the fact that they've gotten quite dry down there.
It is a big interest. However, we get his research on a daily basis, and he's not quite as negative or depending on how you look at it, negative on weather, bullish on price and big reduction in crop conditions in South America. He thinks that there's some damage, but there's still some pretty good crops coming out of there as well.
Around your shop, is there a particular number on Brazil's soybean crop that you folks talk about having in mind right now as to where you would estimate that crop, given the amount of damage that has been reported to this point?
Well, I think every day you hear numbers, and they're continuing to drop numbers. I was just reading this morning, one analyst is looking for 115 million metric tons out of Brazil. We think they're probably in that 118 range yet. We have a tendency of always getting excited when we look at things. I mean, we do it here in the U.S. Farmers in general have and human nature has a way of judging that where, you know, when it looks bad, we think it's a lot worse than it is. So we're in the probably more conservative number of 118. A year ago, they were in the 119 to 120 range. So probably a smaller crop than last year out of Brazil. But the big deal there is that Argentina is going to produce a lot more bushels, a lot more tonnage than they did a year ago. So coming out of South America in total is still probably looking at a larger soybean production out of South America than we had a year ago.
This is an earlier Brazil soybean crop, is it not, than a year ago?
And the earlier part of the earlier crop is the one that's being damaged the most. You know, we're hearing very poor production in some acres, and the other acres and other areas are having huge yields. So it just depends if they got that shower or not. And the other thing about Brazil is the harvest is moving along, and we're continuing to move along with their harvest rapidly, which that takes us to the demand side of the equation, where they're bringing soybeans to the marketplace, shipping out new crop soybeans, and that, again, is competing with the U.S. Export market.
We had a little flurry of activity there with business with China reported a few days ago. What's happened since then, Paul? Is there anything going on?
Well, I was just reading the China supposedly bought a bunch of cargoes out of Brazil, and price-wise, they're at about $94 a ton. U.S. soybeans are $135 a ton. So there's a good reason why they're buying from Brazil. And the other thing is all these numbers that we normally would get from the USDA, because the government's closed, we're not getting them. So I think the trade is kind of hoping for some exciting news, and we probably will whenever the government opens. We're going to get one number of export sales from the last time from the last report they gave us. So we could see some massive numbers coming out, which should be positive to the market and hopefully give the producers some opportunities to market some grain on a surge higher. At least that's what everybody's looking for right now.
So you think there's still some friendly news to come, given the fact that there's been this void in USDA reporting for a few weeks?
I think there is. I think there's, it's a double-edged sword. I think the exports will probably be good, and we'll see a big number. So the traders in general are going to look at that and say, wow, this is really good. But it might be kind of a flash in the pan. The other side of that reporting is that they're going to probably report that we've got a lot of crops left in the U.S. There's going to be a lot of inventory. We've got ending stocks that are going to be big. The bean ending stocks is the number that everybody's watching. Is it going to be a billion bushel, or is it going to be under a billion? I don't think it matters either way right now. We've just got a lot of beans that we need to move. So that, I think, is probably the negative that would come out of government reporting. But I think the initial news headlines could be friendly when they start to release their total export sales since the last report.
Once the partial government shutdown ends, whenever that is, how many days do you think it'll take before they are able to gin up that machine to get some reports out? Will they then start releasing on a regular schedule, or do you think they'll have some special release dates to catch up? Have you heard anything about that? And then, of course, there's the Ag Outlook conference that looms out there in a few weeks.
That I just asked Rich Nelson about it yesterday. Are they going to have the Outlook conference? And it seems like they're planning on it right now. I also asked, are we going to have the February crop report? Because that's coming up here, I think, at the 9th or something of February. So the rule of thumb there is that they need about 2 weeks to gather their data to prepare for those reports. So if the government's still closed after February 1st, we might be missing the February report as well. So there is a lot of questions on that, and I think this information that we are not getting from the government may turn out to be negative down the road, even though we might get a surge of some friendly news at the beginning of that time frame.
I hate to think about government being closed that long, but the end of March might be a really big release. You know, that we usually get a planting intentions report at that time, do we not?
Well, I haven't thought that far or that negatively yet to think that we're going to fall or not get any information until the end of March.
But listen to the headlines; you're getting negative fast.
Oh yeah, well everybody's getting wearing very thin on this thing, yeah. and normally the data that is gathered for the end of March acreage report is gathered at the last week of February, the first week of March. So, you know, if we're not in operation at that time, I mean, that could cause some issues of getting the right data, if at all, for that that March 31st report.
Well, does this mean that more than ever, the planting decision that the farmer is going to make, whatever that mix is going to be this spring, that more than ever there's acreage in flux here? Now, you know, I look back to the fall. Many producers make their decisions, start booking seed, you know, as early as August or September. And I know we've got some private estimates circulating around now on farmer ideas. But is there more in play this year simply because that grower is watching to see what happens with China, you know, what kind of other indications we're seeing here with the Brazilian crop? What's your view of that, Paul?
Well, I think the logical answer would be yes, there is a lot of factors involved. But just last week, I was sitting around the table with a bunch of farmers, and I asked that very specific question: what are you going to plant next year? And out of there was six people around the table. Five of them said, we're going to plant our normal rotation. So if we're planting equal amounts of corn, we're going to plant that same thing this coming year. One gentleman said, I planted all beans last year, I'm going to plant all corn this year. And then the other factor we talked about is the cost of putting the crop in. And staying in rotation, you're going to be much better off from a production side of things. And cost side, I can reduce my fertilizer cost if I'm going back on where I planted soybeans last year, I'm going to plant corn this year. They can it's much more profitable and less cost. I also think that there will be a percentage of the producers that will be influenced by the lender, because the lender is saying, well, you got to generate some cash. And from what I also heard from sitting around the table and talking to a lot of farmers at these meetings is they have got a lot of grain in the bin. And I always ask the question, well, tell me how much grain your neighbor has in the bin, because they don't want to tell me what they have. So, they laugh at that. And then one guy says, hey, I got a lot of corn in my bin too. And I think that's the case. They've got a lot of grain. They need to sell. They're hoping for some kind of surge in price. But the lender also is in a tough situation because he's saying, well, you've got this corn, you've got the cash, you need to sell something in order to generate some cash on your own. I can give you so much money, and you've got to generate the rest. So that's going to determine if they put corn in or soybeans because of total cost. But in reality, if April weather is good for planting corn, they're going to plant corn. Our numbers suggest that we could see about 4 million more acres of corn this year, and about 3 to 3.5 million less acres of soybeans. I know there's other analysts out there that don't see that much, that big of an increase in corn acres. But from a rotation standpoint, you could easily see that because we planted a lot more beans last year. So there's a lot of questions about what the farmer will do. Money has some influence. Weather will have a big influence. Rotation has an influence. So We've got a lot of things to keep track of here over the next couple months.
I know the results of one survey prompted one analyst to say that maybe the producers were being a little more cautious about shifting into corn, where they were waiting And there had been this news of, you know, kind of a detente in the trade war with China, that the discussions were going to be moving along, and that was friendly to soybeans, and they might not shift as much as indicated maybe last fall or in previous surveys. Do you think that the growers are hanging that much on the headlines? I mean, it didn't sound like it from those folks you were talking to.
I think they talk about the headlines. Yeah. I don't think they're going to make decisions on the headlines. And I just some reality here. If we, Rich Nelson has done some numbers, if we decrease the soybean acres by about 3 million, 3.5 million acres, and we use trend yield, ending stocks will actually be over 1 billion bushel for soybeans under the what we know now. And so corn is not going to be influenced very much. If we reduce the yield by the trend yield, take us to trend yield in corn, increase the acres, we're going to have ending stocks in corn within 50 million bushel of where we had it this year. But the soybeans, just because the yield, the trend yield, and the acres, we could have an increase in ending stocks again this coming year in 2019-2020 crop.
Are you somewhat friendly to the corn market?
I can be. I think it's going to – I think we've got ending stocks or stocks usage ratios of about 11.2%, which is really very friendly. If we have any hiccup in supply at all, I think that is positive. And if we can have a handshake with China, they could be buying more corn. They're increasing their ethanol production there. They're going to need more corn to feed livestock and could possibly be supportive. So the corn is friendly, but I am not what I would call bullish. I think our numbers suggest somewhere during this coming marketing year, we probably can get the 420 to 440 range in the December corn contract. So if that's bullish, then that's bullish. But I think the producer needs to take opportunities of any rallies to market that. I don't think we're, you know, a $3 corn right now either. So I think we're in a trading range there. But the soybeans, we've done some economic value studies on that. And with the current ending stocks, the way it sets in soybeans right now, it looks like we could have an economic value there of $7.70.
Ouch.
And that's I told that to these producers the other day, and they go, that's exactly was their comment. Ouch, I don't know if I could take that.
They didn't kick you out of the meeting.
No,
huh?
They didn't. They just realized that it is a tough situation ahead of us here, and they got to be very efficient on their marketing. And the producer, what they really have to do is focus on cutting their input costs, I think, is really the way to save or make some profit this year in agriculture.
That may mean some shrewd conversations with their input suppliers, too. I mean, you know, there's some folks suggesting that when you sit across that table with that ag retailer, you need to really have some very serious discussions. And I've had some growers tell me I'm shopping around to the degree that I haven't in the past for those inputs.
I think that's very true. They've got to have some very tough talks with them if they want to continue to do business with you as the farmer. The other surprising thing is the land rents using University of Illinois numbers. Land rents in average of Illinois only come down $4 an acre. Yeah. I mean, but when you got land prices where they're at, there probably is some justification for that. But that's where a lot of costs can be curbed as well.
Paul, we always appreciate your visits when you come by to talk with us. Thank you for doing so this week.
Thank you very much, Max.
Paul Georgie with Allendale.
I should mention, and I will repeat what I said at the beginning of the show in a moment or so, but Max's conversation with Paul Georgie was actually recorded on Thursday afternoon before we had the decision to reopen the government, at least for a period of time. And so a couple of things that were talked about in that conversation, we now know. USDA's chief economist said he expects the agency will release a monthly crop supply-demand report as planned on February 8 if USDA offices reopen on Monday. And more information regarding other key crop reports that were delayed due to the partial government shutdown will be forthcoming once all USDA staff return to work. the statement of Chief Economist Robert Johansson. He also said he expects the USDA to hold its annual Outlook Forum as planned on February 21 and 22. So a little more certainty coming into some agricultural reports and information. And on the calendar, coming up next week, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Annual Convention. That'll take place in New Orleans, Louisiana. Max Armstrong will be there to cover that event. And while we're talking cattlemen groups, we should mention the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association will be holding its winter conference on Friday, February 8 and 9, and that will be at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. So keep that one in mind, and we will be looking forward to getting those reports once the government offices get reopened. Farm service agencies will be open. But before all of that happens, there'll be some weather to put up with. We have winter storm warnings for tomorrow and Monday here in the Midwest. Colder temperatures even than we have this morning. So it's going to be a challenge, particularly if you're milking cows or if you're feeding cattle or hogs. Gets to be a challenge to do that. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Our thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering work, and thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own, where the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. And if you're a smart speaker user, all you need to do is say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Time now for the news. We say good morning to Don Kleppen.